We are back again with another episode of the On Deck Circle podcast. I am one of your and your only handsome hosts, Nick Zanaboni. Hope everyone's having a great long weekend. Welcome to a special Monday edition here of the On Deck Circle podcast. I will be joined momentarily by my man, Jason and Dave. But before we get started, I got to go to the Celtics game today. So that was fun. I'll have Jason come on in because I have a Celtics question for him. I know this isn't a – how did the Celtics do against the Bulls, Jason?
Oh, man, I know. The Bulls are reeling, man. We've had a – I feel like this whole first – Dude, we had – let's see. We faced Golden State on Friday. We lost. We faced Brooklyn, I think, the Tuesday or Wednesday before that got blown out. Then we faced the Celtics. We were getting blown out until the very end, and we had a chance to win the game. But
it was, man, it's the first game.
It's a tough stretch to go through in like three tough opponents in like 5 days. Yeah. And we're shorthanded. Yep. Like Levine left the game.
Caruso's back soon, I think.
Yeah,
very soon. But
yeah. I'm surprised that you're back already. What time was that game? Like noon? Because the Bulls are playing right now.
Yeah, it was at noon, and then I walked home. It was nice. It's nice living in the city, so I can it was like 2 miles, but like
still it wasn't, that's cool.
Yeah. Tough loss for the Pats on Saturday.
Oof. I had a feeling they were gonna lose. I didn't think it would be like that.
I thought they'd at least cover.
Yeah, that was, and it was over in the first quarter.
And nothing, like, wasn't even close.
Dude, they were, you could tell they came out with a chip on their shoulder after that loss.
Yeah.
Earlier on when there was like that -5 with the wind blowing, they were pissed. And they came out and they showed it.
Like I enjoy the Bills. Their fans are fun. I love Josh Allen. Diggs is great. Dave can come in now.
Oh, man. Thanks. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate allowing me to come on in.
I'm just the gatekeeper here.
Oh, you are. Yeah. Fair, man. It is Monday.
It is.
I don't know what that means. I'm just pointing it out.
Yeah, it's weird. I kind of like it. Yeah. I like the early start. I like not having to, like, work and then think about traffic because, like, I'm always, like,
flying home.
Right. I hear you, man. Yeah, I had all day to do stuff. I updated my dynasty rankings today. Yep. Officially published a full update. I had kind of reached out a little bit to Twitter and just seen, you know, people's thoughts, because there's only a couple of us, myself and Halpern, that go, you know, basically more than 500. And I kind of always hung my hat on that, you know, to be a spot where you can go and just see, you know, super crazy deep rankings. And then I had gotten some feedback recently in the last, you know, few weeks or so that, you know, 500 is really about as far as most people go with them. It's really hard to do the rankings outside of the top 500 because you're taking such huge guesses. I mean, the difference between 700 and 900 is usually nothing. It's usually just preference, and they're very interchangeable. So I came to find, you know, that mostly people were using the second half of those rankings as just, you know, a list of names, so to speak. So I, you know, after some debate and after putting that poll out there, pretty much, you know, the majority of people thought that 500 was enough. So my rankings internally are still, you know, much more than that, but I'm now publishing 500, a little more clear and concise, I guess. But yeah, so that's where I'm at. So check that out at fantasysixpack.net if you have not done so. Also, if you have not liked this, if you're watching us, you know, here on YouTube, be it live or on replay, please go ahead and take a quick second and like it. And if you haven't subscribed to us, do that as well. That'll help get you notified when we're going live, and it helps us out as well. And what we're going to start off here with is our Dynasty Deep Dive, Baltimore Orioles, and then we're going to head into our, you know, kind of a deep dive in my rankings as well. So this week we're talking shortstop. So we're getting into the more normal positions. We've already done starting pitcher. We've already done outfield, and we've gone 25 deep there and 10 deep on prospects. So for the rest of these here, we're just going to go 10 deep on each. So a little bit quicker, you know, with these shallower spots. So with the Orioles, I don't mind going first. Since I was pawned that off to one of you guys. And I'm sitting here looking at the Orioles, you know, system here. And I like to, you know, do things that are a little more off the radar and such. And to be honest, there's not a whole lot in this system. For a team that is as bad as they are, you would think that there'd be a little more depth in this system. But once you get outside of, you know, the top maybe seven, I would say pretty comfortably, it starts to get real thin. So, you know, I took a look at my rankings. I took a look at what MLB Pipeline has, and I saw a very stark difference. And so that's where I wanted to focus my attention. So if you go on Pipeline, which is more of a real life kind of a rankings list, and we talked about this before, where be careful where you're looking when you're looking at rankings, because there's a big difference, obviously, between something that's, you know, fantasy relevant and something that's real life relevant. And so when you look at their rankings, you see Kobe Mayo down at 17th, which is, you know, quite a trip down, especially when you consider that for my rankings in the overall, he's 367. So that does not line up at all. And I think that, you know, it's actually a little bit of a surprise in some regards, because if I look at, you know, Kobe Mayo, I say his best tool overall is his arm. So that obviously doesn't help us much in Dynasty, but in real life that helps. Obviously his power is, well, maybe not obviously, but if you're not aware, his power is not too far behind that. And that's what makes him such a great potential, you know, impact bat for fantasy purposes. But he's a guy that, you know, like I said, I saw a stark drastic difference between my ranking and theirs. And so I thought that it would make sense to, you know, just highlight him. You know, he had a pretty short sample size so far. I mean, in 2021, he was at, you know, two different levels. He played rookie ball and he played low A, and he only got 182 at bats. So there's not a whole lot to look at there. But I mean, for, you know, a 53 game sample, his numbers were not too bad. 9 home runs, 41 RBIs, a 319 average, a very nice 426 on base. So very low competition there, of course. And he's 20 years old doing that. So these are the kind of numbers we'd want to see from him. But he definitely has quite a nice ceiling. And with that, you know, with that arm and such, you would think, you know, that there's a decent chance that, you know, he sticks at the hot corner there. But we'll see. It's more a matter of, you know, if he's going to hit enough for that power to come into play. Because, you know, there's lots of swing and miss to that game. So, you know, he's very much, you know, a flyer still, but you can see by my rankings that I do think that the upside is there. And this might be the time to go get him right now, because he does have a little bit of helium to his name. And if, you know, he starts off, if there is a season this year, but if he starts off hot, he's only going to continue to go up. If he does not, maybe, you know, maybe he's a guy that maybe stands pat more than others, just because there's so much healing behind him right now. So definitely a guy to think about in your leagues, and, you know, maybe check in on, see what you got.
He's got to be close to top 75 by now, right? Like, just like fantasy prospect wise.
I would have to sit there and do some counting.
I think he is. I don't know about yours specifically, but I feel like in other rankings I've seen, he's around 75 to 100-ish.
Well, I'll tell you what, Nick. Why don't you go ahead with your player, and I will do a half-ass count real quick and get you a rough idea of where he sits for me, okay? Perfect.
All right. Well, I have pitcher, and that's an absolute delight for the Orioles. So we're going to go with the only pitcher that I seem to be, I would say the only pitcher on their team, like currently, that should be on your roster or like starting for you is John Means. And we got the news this week about the new park stuff for the O's.
The new dimensions, yeah.
Yeah, and they're raising it and moving it back. Unfortunately for Means, this only affected one or two of his home runs, I think, which I was surprised with. I think it said 15. He gave up 15 home runs. It was either 9 or 15 home runs that were hit into left that would have been affected by this, but only one or two wouldn't have been gone. So I looked deep into him, and he's fine. He's one of these guys that we talk about, and if he's your best pitcher, you're not going to be competing that for a championship. But if he's like your three, you're in good shape. He's going to get you some innings, not going to wow you with the strikeouts, but he's fine. He's the mean. He's the average pitcher, you know?
Threw a no-hitter last year too.
Yeah, he was. He's the perfect guy that was our no-hitter guy.
Yeah.
All right, pitcher that like
maybe during that stretch.
Better team. Like I can see him getting a huge bump, like dynasty wise, if he goes to a different team that's actually competitive. But on the Orioles, he's the best player on one of the worst teams in baseball, and he might not even be the best player with Mullins being like good.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Means. I had him in the league last year, and to my surprise, you hope maybe he'd be like your fourth or fifth best pitcher. Yeah. And then he ended up putting a solid season together in 2021. So it was definitely like one of those guys like, am I really starting John Means every week in this league? Because it's a weekly league. I'm like, yeah, absolutely.
He was great to own in Dynasty because if you had him, you like picked him up or you drafted really late. So he's definitely great value, but right now I'd say you'd probably have to overpay for him, and that's not really worth it.
Right. All right. Well,
I did a little quick count real fast.
Yeah.
He's roughly about 70 to 75. So exactly what you said. Yeah. I counted 71, but you know, I kind of Troy was going through quick. So that's why I say somewhere between 70 and 75.
Yeah. Nice. Checks out.
Yeah. All right, well, I had hitter, and I guess if there's one, you know, shining moment or spot for the Orioles, it's their young, I guess, core that they're kind of building there. You know, they got Mancini, Mullins, obviously, who just had a breakout this year, but I'm actually going to go with Ryan Mountcastle, you know, former top prospect for Baltimore. He actually debuted in that shortened 2020 season, and then last year, in his first full season, he actually had a pretty big breakout. He had really good power numbers, 33 home runs. If you exclude the 2020 season, he's had 5 straight seasons of double-digit home runs dating back to 2016. Back-to-back home runs of 20, or back-to-back seasons of 20-plus home runs and 80 RBIs. Still only 24 years old. Presumably still, you know, a lot of his peak year still in front of him. I know, like we just talked about a little bit with John Means, they are pushing the left field fence back a little bit. But, you know, he hits the ball to all fields. If you look at his spray chart, of his 33 home runs, and they weren't all pull heavy, so I don't know exactly what the pull numbers were, but if you look at the spray chart, it's all over. So I wouldn't be too concerned about the you know, moving the fence back. Obviously, it might affect a couple home runs here and there, but you know, he did only hit 255 in 2021. I think maybe just some growing pains to being, you know, during his debut season, first full season in the majors. I'd see that adjusting back more to like 280, 290 range. High point, I'd say, because we've seen him do, you know, 290, 300 in the minors at double A and triple A, the high levels. So I think, you know, if you can get in that 280, 290 range, contribute 30 home runs, probably 100 RBIs. I think wheels up for Mountcastle at only 24. So
I love Mountcastle.
Yeah. And I think people are a little light on him. And I don't know exactly why, because
it's because of the team.
Well, but I mean, the Pittsburgh Pirates suck, and people love Brian Reynolds.
Yeah,
you're right. I mean, Brian Reynolds is probably a better player right now, but Mountcastle has a much better upside, and people will make excuses and, you know, talk, you know, just they'll make excuses for why Brian Reynolds' numbers aren't a little bit better, but then Mountcastle's putting up great numbers, and it's not looked up, it's frowned upon in some fashion. So I don't know. I think I'm higher on Mountcastle than most as well.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think a lot of it could be just like, it's like, you know, I think a lot of people sometimes get like prospect, like, you know, they're like waiting forever for this guy. Yeah, prospect fatigue on him. Because, I mean, he wasn't like, you know, he's a first round pick, late back, you know, compensatory pick. But I think people have been waiting for him long. They thought he'd come up quicker and make a bigger impact sooner. But obviously, people waiting on him and new are starting to get the reap the benefits.
I mean, I've got him 116th in my overall rankings. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, just to give you an example, guys that are right around him. If I go like five up and five down, I've got Dansby Swanson, Tyler Glasnow, Grayson Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll, Josh Jung, Blake Snell, Ian Anderson, Michael Conforto. I've got him ahead of Galvin Lux. So, you know, and then just to get to Nick's guy, if I look up
multi-position eligible too, first and outfield for Mount Castle.
I'm obsessed with the first and out guys option. I don't know why. It's just I love like Kurloff, like perfect, or like Vaughn, same thing. Just being able to like flip them around daily is pretty important in especially in a like a 30 team league.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you like guys that you can flip around and that are very flexible. That's what you're telling me. You like flexible
show, Dave.
You like flexible guys. Okay, gotcha.
The family. 2022.
To get you your means idea, I've got him at 214. So he's right around Alex Bohm, Ty France, Hedbert Perez, Keibert Ruiz, Michael Kopech, Josh Lowe, Edward Cabrera. So I think that's pretty far up there. all right, let's get to the shortstops. So we're going, like I said earlier, we're going top 10. There is a prospect that makes their way into the top 10. I imagine you can probably take a pretty decent guess at who that is. And then we go 10 prospects as well. So this is a very deep position. You know, when I was sitting there going through the numbers compared to the outfielders on the overall rank where these guys slotted in, they were pretty comparable to where, you know, the fifth guy, the sixth guy, the seventh guy, where they're all fitting in overall. But obviously there's roughly a third of them compared to outfielders. Even when I get down to number 10, number 10 is a guy that I love. And if I'm even in a 12-team league, I would be thrilled to have this guy as my shortstop, you know? But let's get through the list here. Kind of a little bit unfair just because, you know, we talked about this last week with Fernando Tatis is the number one outfielder because he's got eligibility in most places. But more so, he probably fits it in here as shortstop. I've got him number one. He's number one overall. I've got Bo Bichette in at number two. I got him number six in the overall. Trey Turner is third. He's right behind Bichette overall at seven. And then Wander Franco comes in fourth. I've got him right at number 10 overall. So he sneaks in the top 10 of the overall. And then a small drop down to Xander Bogaerts. I've got him at 18 overall. I think that's relatively cut and dry. I feel like that top five, maybe even in that order, is relatively consensus. So I'm kind of curious what you guys think there, any adjustments maybe that you would make or anything that actually surprised you somehow.
I mean, Bogaerts is clearly the best shortstop in baseball, right?
Well, yeah.
No. No, I like it. Like you said, it is pretty close to consensus. Some people I think want to put Trey Turner too, but I'm not one of them. I think
what's
still
up with Trey Turner? People are obsessed with him this offseason. He's good.
I mean, the Dodgers now.
That second base eligibility helps.
Yeah.
Playing for the Dodgers definitely helps.
He's
definitely got a
like year.
Yeah, and I mean, I would say that there would be people that would argue that my ranking of him at seven overall is a little on the low side.
He went second in our mock, I think.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I've seen him go number one overall before in redraft. Again, that second base eligibility really does make a world difference, even though we'll get to second base, but second base is a lot deeper than it had been.
Right.
So last year, him getting second base eligibility was huge. Obviously, you know, as Nick's likes his guys to be flexible. So, you know, the fact that he can slot in at second or short is nice, especially if you attack the shortstop position and you get Turner with your first pick and then you come back with, you know, one of these guys towards the end of the top 10. All of a sudden, you've got awesome players and you're up the middle is set, you know. Let's go ahead. Let's get through 6 through 10 here. We're looking at Manny Machado, number six. I got him 24th overall. Slight little drop off from Xander. And then our first prospect comes in, Bobby Witt Jr. I've got him 26th overall. We'll definitely talk about that. Corey Seager, 31st overall. Obviously, we've talked about him with his signing out in Texas. Ninth overall, Trevor Story. He does not have a home yet, but he comes in 34th overall. And then a guy that I think I like just more than most people, and I don't know that he's in a lot of top 10s, but I've got Tim Anderson at 10 and 36th overall. I think a lot of people slide Marcus Semien into that spot, but I've always been a big Tim Anderson fan. But what do you guys think? There's a little bit more to discuss 6 through 10, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the Bobby Witt thing, like you said, you brought up, is definitely really aggressive. But I think, you know, being one stolen base shy of 30-30 last year probably helps that. I think he's obviously the real deal. Tim Anderson, I do agree. You probably have him higher than most. I'm not a huge Tim Anderson guy. BABIP king over here. At some point, you'd think this BABIP would catch up to him, but it just doesn't, man. It just continues. This continues to get on base and bat 300 somehow with like a 400 BABIP. But yeah, other than that, I think I like I said, the aggressiveness of Bobby Witt. I don't know what other consensus rankings are, but on Bobby Witt, but had him top 10 as a shortstop ahead of guys like Seager, Story, and Anderson and others. And even like someone, I know obviously age plays a lot in the dynasty rankings too. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, but yeah.
Well, yeah, no, let me take a look here. Let me look up a couple of guys that we know, and let's see where they have Bobby Witt Jr. ranked. So our good friends, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg, they're both in 30 Rock with us. They both work for Fantrax as well. We're obviously big Fantrax guys here at Fantasy Six Pack. If I look at Eric Cross's rankings, he has Bobby Witt even higher than I do. He's got Bobby Witt Jr. 20th overall. Okay. And that is for your standard 5x5. And then Chris Clegg, he does an OBP specific. So if I look at Chris Clegg, he's actually got him a little lower as well. He's got him 25th overall. I'm sorry, not lower, higher. So
around the same.
So in reality, yeah, my 26 is actually, I mean, it's right in line. Maybe just slightly a little on the low side. What I will warn you about Bobby Witt Jr. is if it's a guy that you have the balls to go out and try to acquire, now is, I would say, the absolute worst time in the world to try to acquire him.
Yeah.
What I would highly suggest is whether he makes the opening day roster or whether he gets called up, you know, in a month or so, I would let that happen. I would let him have his struggles, let him have a rough 4 to 6 weeks, and maybe people start to question what's going on. And then try to go hard after him. If you go after him now, you're not even going to, you know, you're going to be paying a top 10 price for him. Maybe you can get a top 25, top 30 value once he comes up and struggles. Because that's the most likely scenario. You know, what Jared Kelnick did is normal.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what we expect people to do. So just a thought that I had in regards to Bobby Witt. But I mean, I don't know, man. Tim Anderson, I've always been a big fan of his. Part of it, honestly, it could just be because when he plays the Tigers, he gets a hit in every game against the Tigers. And, you know, he's got good speed. He's got good pop. I've always found him to be a guy that I'm higher on than most. He's got a very well-rounded game. You know, hits for a good average, obviously, as well. That might be his best attribute. Hits at the top of a great lineup. I don't know, man. I could argue to have Tim Anderson as high as sixth on this list. I mean, I don't know if I could put him in the top five, but yeah. I think I can make an argument to put him six, but I don't know.
Yeah. I wouldn't chastise you for putting him there either. Like I said, I don't think he's a bad player. I'm just, like I said, it's so funny how he just keeps hitting 300 somehow with this inflated BABIP. You'd think it would, you know, that you'd see some sort of regression back to the other way, but it doesn't. It just keeps going. Well, like you said, he's the 1-for-4 king every day, man. It's like a hit every day.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But all BABIP is not created equal.
Sure.
You know, there's a huge difference between Nelson Cruz and Tim Anderson. Nelson Cruz, when he hits the ball, it's either going to land for a base hit or he's out. Tim Anderson, he can use that speed and he can steal some hits. You know, he forces the defense to rush and, you know, to play a little bit differently. So I think when you look at the BABIP, again, no single stat is, you know, is ever telling. So, you know, I can make an argument for a guy like Tim Anderson to have a higher than average BABIP consistently that he can outproduce. It does kind of make sense. I got a comment here from our boy, John. Yep. My boy, John, also a 30 Rock member. He says, Prospects Live has Mayo at 32 overall. So, I mean, that's quite high. Yeah. That's back in October. So I don't know how much that changes, but, and then they got a couple of other guys that I was debating on, but like I said, I tried to go for the lowest rated of the guys from my rankings and you know, from pipeline there, but so Gunnar Henderson's at 34 and Colin Towser's at 49. So, I mean, like I said, they're very top heavy. I mean, you got Adley Rutschman in there as well, obviously. You know, Grayson, they got some guys. Yep. So they got some guys at the top, but once you get to about that 7-8 spot, it falls off precipitously. So let's get into the prospects now. We'll go 10 prospects deep. We've obviously talked about the first one already. Bobby Witt Jr. again, 20. Well, this is contradicting here. 25th or 26th overall. Yeah. I don't know which is correct, but whatever. and then we got a little bit of a drop off to the next guy, a guy that I might just be higher on than most. But Noah Marte, I've got him 47th overall. And then again, another drop. So we're seeing big tiers, you know, here in this category of prospects here at the shortstop position. CJ Abrams, I've got third. He comes all the way down to 82nd overall. So again, another massive drop. So we see three separate tiers for that group. Marco Luciano comes in fourth for me. And again, another massive drop. He goes way down to 126th overall. And then O'Neal Cruz comes in at 135th overall. So in those five guys, we have three very distinct tiers. I think that Bobby Witt Jr. is the clear number one. For me personally, I think that Noave Marte is a clear number two. When we get to number three, it can vary a little bit. I do have, like I said, CJ Abrams in kind of a tier of his own, but I could argue for a lot of guys that we'll talk about and a lot of guys on this slide as that number three spot. But this is where we can really get into a little bit of debate. You know, people can have wide-ranging opinions on prospects because we have no idea what to expect. So curious what you guys think here, at least of the top five for now.
I like it. I think it's funny because like, you look at, you know, like Abrams and Luciano, we just talked about prospect fatigue earlier. I feel like Luciano and Abrams are some of those guys that you've just been hearing forever.
And they're still like 20.
Yeah. So it's like those international guys and they come around at like 15, 16, you hear them. But then I do agree with your 1-2 there with Marte and Bobby Witt at the top. And then Abrams, Luciano, those are guys that you like, man, we've been waiting around. I feel like everyone's like, oh, Marco Luciano, he could be the top prospect next year. And he's going to be a top five overall prospect. And we're still just waiting on it. Not awful, but he definitely, you know, is kind of, I wouldn't say struggling, but he's definitely not catapulting the way others thought he would through the lower minors.
I love O'Neal Cruz. He's just huge. Yeah. He's just he's like 6'4 or some shit like that. Like,
yeah, he's huge.
He's someone that just mashes the ball, which is great. And I think that Marte could be the best out of the bunch.
I mean, he could.
Like, he's very good, and I think that this year is going to be big for him if he can, like, show how good he actually is.
Yeah, I mean, Witt is obviously safer. He's got a more well-rounded game. But Marte has at least an equal ceiling to him. Marte could be – I mean, he could be a Hanley Ramirez, you know, kind of player. I mean, he could be very, very, very special. But there's a lot more risk that comes there. We got another comment here from John. Let's backtrack just a smidge here. It says Adamas at 20 is silly. He's talking about 20th is my 20th as far as my overall shortstops. Now, obviously, we didn't go quite that deep, but the point of, you know, Adamas being 20th at the shortstop position just speaks to how deep it is, because even though he's 20th at that position, he's still just 88th overall for me. So we're talking in the range of Franmil Reyes, Alex Kirilloff, JD Martinez, Jose Berrios, Dustin May, Josh Hader, Dylan Cease. So I mean, you can't always necessarily look at the position rankings and take as much out of that as you can the overall. When we look at the shortstop position specifically, Adames is right in the same range as Jazz Chisholm, Ketel Marte, CJ Abrams, Roberto Mondesi, Dansby Swanson, Gavin Lux. So I am actually really high on Willy Adames. So when you see the 20 number, it does kind of stand out a little bit, but he's a top 100 player for me still. So
and I think a lot of it could just be recency bias too. After that trade to Milwaukee, he just got on everyone's radar. You know, and we're not that far off from him, striking out and hitting 240 with Tampa Bay all the time. So
well,
I think recency bias could be in there.
Well, kind of. But I mean, if you look at his stats, if you look at his splits, his splits away from Tampa Bay are just top shelf, like elite. And so that's where a lot of people, and I would consider myself in this camp, are actually higher on Adames than most. If you like, just go back to his Tampa days and look at what he did on the road, and his numbers were significantly better than what he did at home. So when he gets out of Tampa and he goes to Milwaukee and he's just on fire, that actually does match up to what he has done in his career.
Yeah, I was just speaking more to the fact that John saying that Adames at 20 is silly. I feel like he's expecting him to be top 10 because of what he did in the last 3 months of 2021.
Yeah, Adames is good.
But like you said, you still have him as top 100 player.
Yeah, well within the top 100.
Yeah.
In fact, yeah. All right, let's get through 6 through 10 here, prospect rankings. Let's see here. So we start with, I still don't know how to properly pronounce his name, Anthony Volpe, 142nd overall. So this is a guy that a year ago was nowhere even in this stratosphere. And that is maybe the ultimate helium name right now in all of dynasty baseball, all of prospects. I don't know if anyone is hotter right now, so to speak, than Anthony Volpe. Then a guy that I'm higher on than most, Orelvis Martinez comes in at 180th for me. I think a lot of people don't have him inside their top 10. I comfortably have him in the top 10 at number 7. Then we get into some first-year player guys who all get kind of lumped together. We got Marcelo Mayer, who I misspelled his name. I put Marcelo Layer. maybe that's not a good sign. But I got him at 185th overall. I got Jordan Lawler, 9th on this list at 203rd overall. And then Khalil Watson directly behind him in the overall rankings at 204 overall. So I go Volpe, Martinez, Mayer, Lawler, Watson here. Very, very young group here. What would you guys say about this group here, 6 to 10?
The last three are the most interesting to me just because all three of those people get ranked in a different order. Like I've seen some people that think Watson's the best shortstop out of three. I've seen Mayer at the top. But also I think there's, again – a team thing. If you're going to pick the Red Sox player over the Diamondbacks player, at least that's like in most aspects of like thinking. Watson, though, because he fell so far in the draft, he's very confusing to me because of the fall. He was supposed to be like a top three, top four guy.
Yeah, I mean, he landed in a great spot, though. Oh, like
hell of a spot.
I mean, at least he didn't fall and land in Pittsburgh or something stupid. I mean, he landed with with Miami, and that's a great organization. Spot. Yeah, exactly. Great organization.
So I'm curious to how those three look next year, like when we go through this again, because we could there could be a shortstop that like just like Volpe of last year that's just gonna jump in and hit the shit out of the ball, and we're going to be talking about them.
Yeah, probably the only guy out of this top 10 that is going to graduate is going to be Witt. I mean, Witt's definitely going to graduate.
Yeah.
I doubt that O'Neill Cruz, he very possibly will graduate as well. Other than that, all these guys are a little bit away. I mean, Marte may get some time with Seattle, but I don't see him graduating. CJ Abrams, I doubt we see him.
No.
I doubt we see him graduate, especially. Volpe, again, I doubt we see him. We do not see Martinez. We do not see Mayer. We do not see Lawler. We do not see Watson. So there's not a lot of room to just naturally grow here. Like the outfield position where we were talking about Jason Dominguez, we're talking about him, you know, jumping up into the top five next year. There's so many graduations happening in that position that just as long as he stays status quo, he will jump way up. But in this case, all three of those, you know, first year guys, none of them are guaranteed, even with a good season, to jump into the top five. It's just like the major league position. This is very deep as well. And like I said, they're all so far away that it makes it hard to rank these guys because we haven't seen a ton from them. But there's also so many question marks about what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years before they get to that point as well.
I'm just curious on just because we talked about the Volpe thing, and then we had somebody else in a similar situation, just not quite as the whole season, but Oswaldo Peraza.
Yeah.
Where do you have him as far as your shortstop? Well, I know that, he started off that beginning of 2021 where he had hit like, I don't even know what it was. He had some record for like most home runs in a month at like double A or something.
Again, this will give you an example.
He fell off.
Just how deep the shortstop position is. Because when I look at the number, I think, boy, that seems low. But then you look at the guys around him and you go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I've got him 46th overall as far as shortstops are concerned. So we're talking about in the neighborhood of Garrett Hampson, Tyler Freeman, Jordan Groshans, Reginald Preciado, Christian Hernandez, Gunnar Henderson. And then if I do the overall, let's see where we find him. Give me just a second to load this up here. Overall, he's 302nd, so that's still pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Again, we're in the neighborhood of same guys we just talked about to some extent. Garrett Hampson, yeah. Tyler Freeman, Andrew McCutchen, Daniel Lynch, Austin Wells, Eliezer Hernandez, Matt Manning. So, I mean, I feel like that's a pretty good spot for him. If it wasn't for Volpe, I bet you Peraza would be even higher because there'd just be a little more steam behind him.
I was just curious because, you know, same farm system, and they both had a really good 2021. So I was just curious.
At least one of them won't be playing shortstop. So somebody's moving to center field, the second base, maybe third base. I don't know. But as it sits right now, it's Volpe's world, and Peraza's just living in it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, gentlemen. Well, that will do it for our Dynasty Deep Dive here on the Baltimore Orioles. And then our shortstop position for both, MLB and minors combined, and then minors specifically. I think maybe next week we'll shift over to third base, which I feel like used to be a hell of a lot deeper than what it is. So third base will be a little interesting. We'll do 10 and 10 there as well. Let's go ahead and pick our team for next week. So, Nick, why don't you give me a number 1 through 500?
.428
gives us Garrett Crochet of the White Sox. I feel like we've done the White Sox. All right, so Jason, are we going up or down?
We did White Sox, right?
Yep, I think so.
Go up.
Up
300.
So we got. Oh no, I'm just going to go up from Garrett
Crochet. Okay, gotcha.
So that gives me Peyton Burdick, which is the Miami Marlins. So we'll do Miami Marlins next week, and we'll go ahead and do third base as well. Nice,
awesome.
Easy way to do that. So again, if you're watching this live, we greatly appreciate it. I know that this kind of came up out of nowhere, so your dedication is greatly appreciated. Whether you're watching it live or on a replay, please go ahead, like it on whatever platform you're watching, and subscribe there as well. You can catch my man Jason Beckner on Twitter at JRBex, and Nick Zanaboni, the heartthrob of Fantasy Six Pack. You can get him at EdZanaboni93. That's NZANIBONI93. And we appreciate everyone for tuning in, and we will catch you next week.
Always. See you, boys.
See ya.